boxing, gambling. Did you guys ever do anything with Don King? Any contacts with Don King?
Yes. I went in front of a grand jury. I was subpoenaed in front of a grand jury for boxing. When I was there, I was out with John Gotti. Mike Tyson was the Now, I had another guy, and I can't think of his name. I knew the trainer, and I knew the black guy. I was training in the gym with him occasionally. He was a tough fighter, and he was a little bit over the hill. So I thought of a thing to set up a fight. I wanted him, and someday I'll get the name. I can't remember it right now. But I'll get him to fight the champ in Italy. The champ in Italy was with two brothers who were both made guys in the mob. So I'm reaching them through the Italian people. I want this guy to come in and fight my guy, the black guy. And my guy will win. So he gets your belt. So if he wins and he has your belt, I want to hook up a fight with Mike Tyson. And I want big money because it's a championship. He's got a belt. You got a belt. The numbers are bigger. We know that Mike could probably beat you. Now, if the people around Mike want to make him duck a fight, I don't think he would do that. But then it's another story. But we never got that far. The Italian guy had to come here and fight a lesser opponent first before he fought my guy. And he lost to that guy. So now the thing is off. But in the process of all of this, John knows what's going on. I have a guy, a street guy, can't even think of his name, but he's going to Don King talking about a potential fight. He's not having a lot of luck. Don King stands up. He don't want it, no part of this thing. He mentions John Gotti, this, that. I'm a tough guy. I went to jail for this and that. John, I'm not doing any of that bullshit. So the kid comes back and tells me. So I said, John, forget the whole thing now. It ain't going to work. He won't do it. Don King won't do what we want. Did you tell him to mention my name? Yeah, I did. He don't want to be bothered. He said he's a tough guy. He did time. Really? Yeah. Tell the kid to go back, make another appointment, and kill him. Do you want me to kill Don King? No, not you. The kid, this guy. You want me to tell this kid to go back and kill Don King? Yeah, well, hit him with a proposal. If he says no, take a gun out and shoot him. All right. That's what you want? Yeah. All right. I grabbed the kid. He was in the kid. He's a guy, you know, who's tough. Listen, you're going to go, you're going to hit him with this proposal. If he says no and gives you that shit, I'm a tough guy, take the gun out and shoot him. Shoot him right in the head. Kill him. You want me to kill Don King? I said, it's not me. John wants you to kill him. What do you want me to tell you? You got to kill him. He took off. The kid took off. I'd never seen hide a hair of him again. He must have left the country. I don't know where the f*** he went. He took off. So we never went after Don King because I didn't want. I'm definitely not going after him because this is insane now. We're hitting the guy because he don't want to do a deal. We'll be hitting guys every other week.
Don, a very good morning to you, sir.
A very good morning to you, Pedro. It's just a delight. First of all, to all your fans and listeners, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year.
Oh, Don, you and I have been doing this a long time together, haven't we?
Yes, we have, you know what I mean? And we'll continue to do it, you know what I mean? It's a long time to come, you know what I mean? So spiritually, forever.
Okay, good enough. Let's get the negs out of the way. We lost great Peyton Scherer this year. I mean, I know he was 9 years old, but it was a shock to me. I talked to him about 10 days, 2 weeks before, and he was feeling fine, and then boom, he was gone.
Well, you know, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I'm just so delighted that I had the opportunity to share life with Peyton Scherer. He just was a divine individual and a great, great boxing man.
And, Don, you lost one of your right hands from Cleveland, didn't you, about a month and a half ago?
Yes, we have. I lost a good woman that was just tremendous, and I'm fighting for women's rights. Her name was Constance Hopper, and she was the editor of one of my newspapers, but a lifelong friend. Went to school together. So it was just a one of those things, but I celebrate her life because she was 81 years old, and she did such a tremendous job fighting for freedom, justice, and equality for the women as well as the men, for all people. She symbolized that one land, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And so she was a dear friend, and she's gone, but she's on the money right now up there, still working and prodding along to make things happen for a better America.
and justice for all, one of your famous quotes. Are you surprised that there is so much protest and unrest in here in 2014? It seems like we're in the 60s again, Don.
No. I'm not surprised. I can't say that. This is a way of life that has been developed, Pedro, that has got four centuries involved in it. And so we have to do is the system that permits these type of acts to come about is what we must change. You know, we always treat the effects. We do not treat the cause. The cause is that we fought for freedom and liberty from King George and then turn around and did the same thing to a class of people that King George was doing to them. The women do not get their rights no matter what they say or do. And the only symbols, Pedro, of slavery was in coinciding with the woman and with the people of color. So therefore, they were both considered inferior. They were considered property. And this is this residence is still there. And so until we work together, come together, believe in this country and the essence of what it stands for, one land, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, we will be it's going to be unrest until that time. So let us try to change that thing and make this thing the self-evident truth that all men and women are created equal and then endowed by the higher force, the Lord, with the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
You know, Don, you know I spent 8 years with the San Francisco Police Department, and I know what it's like to get in nasty situations. But the bottom line is I think the mentality of policemen across the country was they got away from hiring streetwise guys like me and went to hiring college degree guys where there's only a white and a black and there's no gray area, when in the world of police work and law enforcement, it's all about gray.
You know, you're absolutely correct in that statement, but you have to understand also that the policemen, before they get to be policemen, they're taught. And they are taught that one class of people is inferior to another. It's the same thing that comes up. And so, therefore, when they do get the power and they get a position of life and death in their hands, they forget about what it is and they result to what they've been brought up with all along and throughout their life. You got to be able to go to the cause, man, and you got to be able to enlighten people, educate people as to what the effects of life is and how it is and how we all going to live together because we are brothers keeper, whether we want to be or not. And so I think that, you can see the same thing happening in Nevada and Las Vegas when the corporate people get in. These are kids that have been grown up and they learn accountability and responsibility, but they don't have no gray area in there. If it ain't dotted on the adding machine, it don't add up. You know what I mean? But you got to be able to deal with people and respect their culture, their background, their upbringing. Then you can try to find a way to means to change things that could not be changed if you're just going to go over it and make it hammer and nail, black and white, hit me on the head. But what hurts us in the police department is that they can do it with impunity. You know what I mean? There's no consequences. So this is what you got to understand. We cannot have that power of life and death. That is supposed to be only endowed to our maker, our creator, our Lord and Savior.
The great Don King. What more can I say? Don, now you're coming back into the spectrum as far as the heavyweight division is concerned with the heavyweight champion. Of course, we're talking about Burmeister Vern. How's he doing these days? Well, what's life treating him? How's life treating him? Is he happy being champion? Does he feel like...
Yes, you know what? He's a great guy. You know, he's a great guy. You know, he's got to be able to work hard and dedicate himself. He's coming from the struggle, as Frederick Douglass would say, without struggle, there's no progress. You must be able to deal with what is real, and he's going to be a people's champion. I'm looking forward to great things from him. So I'm going to help him in that way, every way that I can. And the heavyweight boxing is a return to glory of America. And it makes me feel good to be part and parcel of the heavyweight championship match in May 10th at USC. And now a heavyweight championship match will be in Las Vegas, the capital of boxing, at the MGM Grand under the auspices of Richard Stern, the president of entertainment, who is doing a remarkable job. And you have to give credit to this guy named Steven Espinoza, who got this job was dropped in his lap and with the exile of Ken, and now Steven Espinoza is doing a remarkable job of putting this thing together and bringing the old glory back to this great nation of America. So I'm looking forward to that fight with great anticipation. I will all
be regular seasons typically
about it. Be there. If you can't be there live and on the scene, then check it out on the screen on Showtime. It's going to be a fabulous, fabulous evening of boxing with Bermain Stervain and Deontay Warrior. Wilder, I should say. And he's got 32 wins, 32 knockouts. That's a perfect record, you know what I mean, for whatever he was doing and whoever he was fighting. And so Bermain has come from the struggle himself, you know, and he is the champion of the world, the heavyweight champion of the world. So
does it, I don't know if you know as general, but like across the country, does NCAA Division I baseball look like it's going to happen for the most part?
Yeah, I think so. I do. I've been following it mostly on social media, and it looks, you know, as each conference rolls out their expectations and their protocols and their policy, it looks as though everyone is taking similar precautions, trying to minimize travel, minimize midweeks, especially once conference starts, they want to keep conference as tight as possible. So I see it across the country moving in a good direction. Nobody is really taking drastic measures or taking any sort of severe directions, change of direction. And everybody wants a full season. It looks like everybody's still fighting for it. And we'll continue to approach it with, you know, cautious optimism.
That's great news. I love the quote MLK. His quote, the measure of a man is not how he responds in times of comfort and convenience, but rather times of uncomfort and inconvenience. And he's talking about the measure of a man, but he's not talking about a man. He's talking about a human being, right? The measure of a woman, the measure of a man, the measure of an employee, the measure of a player, the measure of a catcher, the measure of your outfield, the measure of anybody. So how is that affecting, you know, what are you finding out here? Because the quote is simple. The measure of a player is how they respond in times of uncomfort and inconvenience. So how would you say players have responded in this time of uncomfort and inconvenience, maybe in a way where they've done some good things and also areas that they can improve upon?
It's a great question. And generations from now are going to continue to look back at this time period psychologically, socioeconomically, and be able to study so much of the behaviors that were brought out because of this, that were fostered because of this. Just in the very small sample size that I've been exposed to, it seemed to be rather polarizing, where if there were strengths buried deep within you that needed a different force or a different act to bring them out, then this brought it out. If there were some insecurities, if there were some issues that you hadn't dealt with psychologically, those got pushed to the surface as well. And so we really had to take a step back and reevaluate how we were going to approach this fall with that understanding, and took a lot of time in figuring out psychologically what each player individually needed in order to help grab their development from where it was when they stepped foot on campus in August to get them to where they are now. Because some kids showed up a lesser version of themselves, not just physically, but just a lesser version of themselves from a confidence standpoint. They just didn't have that same belief in themselves because they didn't have that full senior season to sort of hang that hat on and walk into the program with some confidence and some street cred because of these accolades. They had zero street cred walking into the program. And, some kids showed up in much better physical shape than they were when everything got shut down. So that was a pleasant surprise. A few guys showed up and they were more aggressive, more confident, more relaxed. So they'd obviously done some work on the mental side of the game. And we encouraged their development throughout the entire time we were shut down, not just their bodies, but more importantly than their minds. We knew we'd get their bodies back relatively quickly. We knew it was their mindset and their competitive edge, because that's what we live for. That's what we train. That's what we work for. We work to compete, and to compete at a very high level against other high level competitors. And with that being stripped away from us for such a long time, we really needed to focus on bringing the competitive edge back to them individually and then back to the group as a whole.
That's impressive. That really is. And you guys are making it a priority. I don't know if I've heard of anybody doing that, what you're talking about, like addressing the individual and their needs, which, you know, I think as coaches, we're getting better. We're starting to learn that, you know, even with our hitting approach, right? It's not about just there's seven drills for all of our hitters. I mean,
right?
It's pretty spread information now. I mean, it's something that I thought about years ago, and I actually taught for years the individual need, the individual menu for the individual. But we're doing that now. You're doing it with the psychology side, with the mental game, which is truly impressive, because that's the motor, right? And right. We're gonna be right back with our guest Troy Nakamura from University of San Francisco associate head coach. We'll be right back.